This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. In the wake of a catastrophic collapse of a commercial in-water net pen that released hundreds of thousands of non-native Atlantic salmon into the Salish Sea, even as Cook Aquaculture, the owner of the facility, is looking to expand a similar facility on the Strait of Juan de Fuca, KPTZ Compass this week takes a look back to a 2013 story we did about the devastating effect such fish farms have had on British Columbian wild salmon stocks, even without massive accidental releases. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
My advice is paint a sign everywhere. You do not want this industry here. Support your local politicians who are trying to help fight this thing off. Find out, is it lawful for a feedlot to dump all of its raw waste into your waters? But to have a dirty industry come in and just say, well, we're not going to shovel our manure. We're just going to pour it all over the place to the tune of tons per day. Oh yeah, and we have actually destroyed wild salmon everywhere. There's no template. There's no model you can follow to say, oh, it really worked here. If they get in and they say, oh, we're going to monitor, we were told that we were going to be able to know what was going on inside these farms, that there was going to be monitoring, that they weren't going to put them on wild salmon migration routes, that the local people were going to be in control. That was wrong. We were not in control. I mean, I wish to this day that I'd either moved much farther north or that we had actually just put our boats and our bodies in front of that industry and stopped it. It destroyed my town. There's 8 people left. We have toxic algae blooms. Nobody comes there to go fishing. The killer whales left. The salmon farming industry is 98% Norwegian-owned. They got everything they wanted. I would do everything within the law to stop it right now.
That is the voice of Dr. Alexandra Morton, the heroine of a deeply disturbing documentary film by the name of Salmon Confidential that was shown to a sold-out Rose Theater in the summer of 2013 when Jefferson County commissioners were embroiled in a dispute with the state of Washington over a complete ban they had enacted on in-water net pen fish farming. The state's Department of Ecology had ruled that an outright ban was unlawful and had ordered the county to come up with some kind of conditional permitting process. The commissioners have been strongly influenced by the film in their decision to ban the practice. County Commissioner Phil Johnson introduced the film like this.
What would you say if you were approached by a multinational corporation that said, if I got a deal for you, I want to build an industry on your shoreline that may diminish your property value, degrade your water quality through contrary to state law, increasing rather than decreasing harmful nutrients, and through chemicals and pesticides, and may jeopardize your native species through sea lice, infestation, disease, and virus, so we can reap huge profits by raising an inferior product to sell to a distant market with little or no benefit to you. How would you respond? Well, I want you to think about this movie goes forward, because that's what we're being offered right now, but there's one caveat that they have also added to it. We can't say no.
Citing concerns about pollution and impacts on native salmon, the states of Oregon and California have banned in-water net pens. But with a legal code that actually requires marine counties to provide a path for their development, Washington State is now the biggest producer of marine-farmed finfish in the nation, producing some 17 million pounds annually. One of the biggest fears opponents of net pens have had came true on Saturday, August 19th, at about 4 in the afternoon. A huge commercial net pen containing an estimated 305,000 non-native Atlantic salmon located at Cypress Island near Anacortes, Washington, somehow collapsed, or imploded as early newscasts described the event, releasing what the operator of the facility, Canada-based Giant Cook Agriculture, originally estimated to be 4 or 5,000 fish, a figure that rapidly escalated to tens of thousands, and finally to an admission that the pens had totally collapsed and an unknown number of fish had escaped. The nearby Lummi tribe, which depends upon the salmon fishery for its livelihood, quickly declared a state of emergency, and the State Department of Fish and Wildlife issued permission for the public to catch as many Atlantic salmon as they could. Despite efforts that reportedly recaptured an estimated 150,000 fish, though, Atlantic salmon have now been reported not only far up nearby rivers, but in the Pacific Ocean as far south as the Oregon coast and north into British Columbia. Cook officials said the disaster was caused by unusually high tides associated with the impending solar eclipse, an explanation that was quickly debunked by scientists, who pointed out that there would be 145 tides that high or higher in 2017. The timing of the catastrophe was awkward at best for Cook, which is seeking approval to expand its operations and build a set of similar net pens in the very active waters of the Strait of Juan de Fuca, off of Eddy's Hook near Port Angeles. A hearing that was scheduled for September 7th on that proposal before the Clallam County Hearing Examiner was called off at Cook's request. A request that is not surprising, consider the local anti-net pen passions that have been reawakened by the incident. A hastily organized symposium on in-water fish farms sponsored by the North Olympic Group of the Sierra Club attracted a full house at the Squim Transit Center last Tuesday evening, and it's a fair bet that most of those there would have shown up this week at the hearing to oppose Cook's plans. Many of the symposium attendees had first learned of Dr. Morton's work and been educated about net pens and in-water fish farming by that 2013 showing of the film Salmon Confidential at the Rose Theater. The film documents in wrenching detail the demise of some of the world's best surviving salmon runs and makes a convincing case that the cause of the collapse is the advent of massive corporate net pen fish farms like the one at Cypress Island, where a witch's brew of viruses form a toxic underwater cloud that poisons wild salmon as they pass by on their way to upstream breeding grounds. The film is replete with images of riverbanks littered with the corpses of salmon, their normally bright red gills gray and mucus clotted, their disease-ravaged bodies festered with blisters and pustules. But worse than those images is the persuasive documentation of a Canadian governmental cover-up of a viral outbreak that, if disclosed, would shut down international trade in the farmed fish, a cover-up seemingly designed to protect the industry at the expense of an entire species and the ecosystems and human economies that rely on it. I interviewed Dr. Morton when she came to Port Townsend in 2013 for the presentation of the film.
In about 1987, the first salmon feedlot moved into the area. It was just a little pen tied up behind a little tugboat. And I thought, wow, good idea. That will bring some more people, because we were a community of about 200 people with a one-room school, and the school was always threatened with closure. At first, the people lived in the community, and it did, in fact, bolster the school population to something like 15 children. And everything was fine until the industry got bigger. At first, there was 125,000 fish per pen, and then it bumped up to almost a million. Very rapidly, the industry began to put itself where my neighbors were fishing, right on top of the best prawn and rock cod and wild salmon locations. And the fishermen came to me to see if I would talk to government, because in the past, I had gone to the fishermen to ask about salmon. So I learned a lot from commercial fishermen. And so when the industry began to squeeze them right out of their fishing grounds, they came to me. And I was like, oh, no problem. I talk to DFO all the time. They must not know.
DFO,
Department of Fisheries and Oceans, Fisheries and Oceans Canada. So I began writing letters to Fisheries and Oceans Canada saying there's a problem that you're putting the farms on the migration route of the wild salmon and the rock cod and the prawns. And then I'm writing, well, now we've got toxic algae blooms. My neighbor was spraying down his boat and his lips went numb. And oh, no, now we've got Atlantic salmon in the rivers, and oh, they got these big sores on them. And so do the salmon, the wild salmon in our rivers. I ended up writing over 10,000 pages of letters. I was convinced that if I did a logical, well-researched letter pointing out the problems, that Fisheries and Oceans Canada would swoop in and go, oh, sorry, yeah, we'll fix that. Here's what we're going to do about it. But instead, every response back to me said, Dear Ms. Morton, there's no evidence. was no evidence that that was related.
But you were presenting them with evidence, weren't you?
I was presenting them with anecdotal evidence, like my observations, and then research from other countries. It took me 10 years to actually see the no evidence part of their letters and see the pattern. I can't believe how slow I was there. So in about the year 2000, I decided, okay, I'm a biologist. I'm going to get the evidence and start measuring the impact around here. So I've written scientific papers and had them published on how they displace the killer whales using loud sounds, how that sea lice from salmon farms are killing juvenile wild salmon, that bacteria around salmon farms are becoming antibiotic resistant, and now that European viruses are flooding out of these farms that are farming Atlantic salmon, and that this is a threat to Pacific salmon. The problem with feedlots in general is that you change all the rules for bacteria and viruses in the wild. Long before the salmon dies of the virus, one of the predators is going to take it out. Because as soon as the salmon is slow, it starts to wobble, boom, it's eaten. Whether it's a tiny little fry and it's eaten by a kingfisher, or it's a big adult and it's eaten by a killer whale. But in the farm, it's a whole different set of rules. The rules change. The lethal nature of these viruses increases. And because salmon farms are just contained in nets, and because the currents of the water can move a particle 10 kilometers in a day, you suddenly have billions of viral particles pouring out of this. And the models that the government has done shows these pathogens filling the channels. They say when a salmon feedlot has a viral outbreak and it's killing the fish in the farm, you're getting 65 billion infectious viral particles coming out of there per hour. Wild salmon have never dealt like that. I mean, it'd be like running your child through the tuberculosis ward on his way to school.
It was the threat from viruses that ultimately commanded Dr. Morton's greatest attention. In 2010, she was invited to participate in a study carried out by a scientific body known as the Cohen Commission, which was assigned the task by the Prime Minister of studying the rapid disappearance of what had been the largest salmon run in the world, that of the Fraser River. It was then that Morton learned of the work of government biologist Christy Miller.
This is a woman who reads the immune systems of fish. Interesting, powerful new science form called genomic profiling. And in 2005, DFO tasked her to read the immune system of all these Fraser sockeye that were getting back to the river and then dying just before they spawned, all the eggs still in them. So the government was sure that Miller was going to find out that the fish had died of exhaustion at the last minute. But the immune markers that popped up were cancer, tumors, immune system problems, retrovirus, leukemia. And she looked at these and was like, wow, what is that? And looked at all the viruses out there. And there's only really two retroviruses in salmon. And one of them is called salmon leukemia. Salmon leukemia was discovered by Fisheries and Oceans Canada. And it was discovered in the fish farms on the Fraser sockeye migration route. This was a disease that had never been seen before. And the disease was epidemic, and they tested sockeye with it, challenged them with the virus, and wild Chinook salmon, and they all got it. And the government did nothing about it. They left this industry sick with this salmon leukemia, and as soon as they started running back in through areas where this disease was coming out of the fish farms, the population of Fraser sockeye began to decline.
Does DFO not have some sort of charter obligation to protect the wild salmon?
They are mandated to protect wild salmon, but somebody also mandated them to promote salmon farming. Not just manage, but promote salmon farming. What's DFO doing promoting salmon farming? It should be the Department of Agriculture or maybe Commerce or something. So they have a split mandate. And when I read all the emails in DFO and the briefings and I see what's going on, every single time push comes to shove, farm salmon trump wild salmon.
As Dr. Morton says, salmon leukemia is a newly discovered virus and thus has so far escaped listing as a virus of international concern. But another virus, known as ISA, must be reported immediately upon discovery under international guidelines, and is considered so serious that strict quarantines and destruction of stock would be required if it were discovered, an eventuality that would, of course, be disastrous for the industry.
I was reading the disease records of the province of British Columbia, the actual only vet that actually gets to look at farm salmon, and he was reporting the symptoms of the ISA virus, which is in the influenza family. It has spread worldwide wherever Atlantic salmon are farmed. And a friend of mine at that time was trying to figure out what was going on with another incredible salmon stock called the Rivers Inlet sockeye. And he was so depressed by the fact these fish are going down, 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 he couldn't figure it out. And so I felt like I should just give him some kind of an idea. And I said, if I was you, I'd check him for ISA virus, because the vet was seeing the symptoms of the virus in the farm salmon. And he tested 48 of these little sockeye out of the Rivers Inlet, and two of them came up positive for ISA. It was shattering. I was devastated because I thought we were working to prevent this virus. So I flashed down to the Fraser River, tested 11 salmon that were dying in that river, and three of them were positive. I actually burst into tears. Miller was prohibited from testing for the virus, but she saw this happening and she tested. She got positives. I sent samples to Norway. He got positives. So the federal commission that was underway on the Fraser sockeye had closed, but it reopened when these positive findings came out. And there we discovered Fisheries and Oceans Canada in 2004 had gotten 100% positives in one of the most endangered salmon stocks in British Columbia called the Cultus Lake sockeye. And they hid that from the Stolo First Nations, whose territory it was from. They hid that from the federal commission into the decline of the Fraser sockeye. The only reason we heard about it is the lab that actually did the tests felt that the document had to go in. So, you know, what we have going on is a cover-up. And I don't know how they think you can cover up viruses in salmon, because this is a national, international incident. It's going to spread down into Washington State. Both the United States and Canada have made public proclamations that the virus is not here. But I can tell you that the tests that they're using don't work. What they're using is called virus isolation, where you need the entire virus. What we're finding is pieces of the virus, and we're getting positive hits on ISA virus. The probability that that is chance is virtually zero. If you want to go and find the whole virus, if you want to confirm it, where you would go and test is in the farms. And you would look for the sick ones, and you would test those. But nobody is looking in the fish farms.
Why not? I mean, how do they justify not looking?
They say the fish farmers are looking for it, and they haven't found it. So they're trusting the salmon farmers. The government is not looking in the fish farms for the ISA virus. And we saw testimony at the Cohen Commission that if ISA virus is confirmed in Canada, the United States is going to close their border to BC farm salmon. Well, I can tell you right now, the probability that ISA virus has crossed the border in BC farm salmon, to me, is 100%. I mean, how is it I can go to supermarkets and test farm salmon and get ISA virus hits? You know, the fish farmers won't let me get near their farms to test their fish, but they are selling them. They're in the market sitting there on ice. So I go and test them. And I was pretty shocked. Long, skinny, emaciated fish, fish with open sores, fish with gills that are really full of mucus and brown. Just really appalling. I'm hoping someone in the United States will start doing that as well. Because the other thing that's coming out of Norway is a woman there, Annelise Moren, and she, as a pediatrician in the hospital in Bergen, has blown the whistle on the product because of the high levels of toxins in it. PCBs, dioxins, mercury, cadmium, persistent organic pollutants. These are toxins that bioaccumulate in our body, and because the farm salmon are so fat, they are exceptionally full of it. These toxins bind to fat, and when a mother gives birth, 94% of her toxins of this type go into the baby. And we have the same companies here.
I was just astonished to hear the trouble you have even finding a place to do the testing that you're doing at your own expense. You can't even send it to the government's own labs. They won't check your samples for you. So you had to send them to like two remote locations.
Yeah, when I send a sample to the Atlantic Veterinary College in Prince Edward Island, Canada, If he gets an ISA virus positive detection, the Canadian Food Inspection Agency goes to his lab and confiscates the sample. And they claimed that they were retesting those samples.
They're also taking the evidence.
Yes, they're taking the evidence away, and they claimed they were retesting. And then there was a lot of headlines that came out, particularly in the beginning, saying that the lab that Alexander Morton is using is getting false positives. But recently I had quite a big virus chunk detected, 400 base pair, and the CFIA went and confiscated the sample, and the lab and I were kind of encouraged because we thought, okay, for sure this time the CFIA is going to get the same finding. So 2 weeks after this, I contacted the CFIA and said, hey, how'd it go with that sample from Skuna Bay? And they said, oh, well, here's the guy to talk to. He's the lead investigator. Well, over a course of emails, what he said was, first of all, they put the sample in ethyl alcohol immediately, which kills the virus, so they'll never be able to confirm it. Second of all, they never do any follow-up testing on any of my samples ever because I don't have chain of custody. And I said, okay, so I don't have chain of custody. What if I get chain of custody and I just send the sample straight to you? He said, no, you can't do that because we don't accept samples from the public. So I said, well, then you got to go to the farm. This is a reportable virus. We got a solid hit in a, you know, highly, highly accredited lab that's publishing on this virus. And they said, no, we're not going to go to the farm. All the fish are dead. You know, they
what? All the fish on the farm were dead?
They said, you know, they'd all been harvested, so they were gone. I said, well, but they have the juveniles of those fish. You know, they don't just kill all their fish off. The lineage exists. And they said, no, we're not going to go to the farm because the farmer says it's fine. So this product is being shipped to the United States.
If the message to Dr. Morton of refusing to test her samples or to allow her so-called chain of custody weren't a clear enough message to leave the ISA virus question alone, a really blunt threat came last year in a proposed piece of legislation called Bill 37 that seemed to be specifically written with her in mind.
Bill 37 was a provincial legislation that was proposed. And it would have made it a criminal act to name where you found a virus-infected piece of food. So, in other words, you could not say, I got a fish from a certain supermarket and it had this virus. And if you did say that, you'd be sent to jail for 2 years and fined $75,000. And the reasoning they gave was if they put this law in place, the farmers would feel much more relaxed about reporting viruses to the government. It doesn't make any sense because really, if you want your farmer to report viruses, you just say either you report your virus or you lose your opportunity to farm in this province, this region, this country. That's the way to go.
So I know that you have heard about the campaign in Jefferson County to get fish farming going here and that our county commissioners tried to pass a ban, which our own Department of Ecology declared illegal. So what advice do you have for us here in Jefferson County?
Well, first of all, I am shocked that Jefferson County is not allowed to say no to salmon farming. This is an industry that has destroyed wild salmon populations everywhere it has gone. There's a paper, 2008, Ford and Myers. That was the conclusion they came to. My advice to Jefferson County is paint a sign everywhere. You do not want this industry here. Support your local politicians who are trying to help fight this thing off. Find out, is it lawful for a feedlot to dump all of its raw waste into your waters? But to have a dirty industry come in and just say, well, we're not going to shovel our manure. We're just going to pour it all over the place to the tune of tons per day. Oh, yeah, and we have actually destroyed wild salmon everywhere. There's no template. There's no model you can follow to say, oh, it really worked here. If they get in and they say, oh, we're going to monitor, we were told that we were going to be able to know what was going on inside these farms, that there was going to be monitoring, that they weren't going to put them on wild salmon migration routes, that the local people were going to be in control. That was wrong. We were not in control. I mean, I wish to this day that I'd either moved much farther north or that we had actually just put our boats and our bodies in front of that industry and stopped it. It destroyed my town. There's 8 people left. We have toxic algae blooms. Nobody comes there to go fishing. The killer whales left. The salmon farming industry is 98% Norwegian owned. They got everything they wanted. I would do everything within the law to stop it right now.
In response to the Cypress Island net pen collapse, Washington Governor Jay Inslee has instructed the State Department of Ecology to put on hold any permits for new net pens. The permit moratorium means that the State Department of Ecology will not consider Cook Aquaculture's application to place 14 circular net pens spanning an area of almost 10 acres, 1.5 miles off of Port Angeles in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, which is about 5.8 acres more than the facility off of Eddie's Hook that the new fish farm is intended to replace. The project also includes a 100-foot-long barge, which would contain up to 350 tons of fish feed. The plan would place some 900,000 Atlantic salmon capable of yielding 10 million pounds of fish every 15 to 20 months in the middle of the strait, where current and wave action is much greater than in the current Eddie's Hook facility. In a report cited in a recent Peninsula Daily News article, Cook project manager Greg Ballard said the new pen's engineering is superior to the current Eddie's Hook facility, using heavy-walled plastic pipe rather than the marina-style net pen configuration that exists at Eddie's Hook. If and when the governor were to lift the permit moratorium, the project would still need to pass several hurdles before receiving a permit and proceeding to construction and production. Although the Clallam County Department of Community Development has already issued a determination of non-significance for the project, meaning that no environmental impact statement would be required, Clallam County Planning Manager Steve Gray said that finding would be reviewed in light of Cook's Cypress Island net pen collapse. And then, once the Department of Ecology determines the project's consistency with the U.S. Coastal Zone Management Act, the Army Corps of Engineers and the Coast Guard would need to sign off for a permit under the U.S. River and Harbors Act, according to the PDN article. Meanwhile, the nonprofit Wildfish Conservancy has announced plans to sue Cook Aquaculture for violation of the Federal Clean Water Act for releasing farmed salmon, dead carcasses, and other debris into the Salish Sea. The Salmon Confidential documentary can be viewed at the website salmonconfidential.ca. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans with assistance from Monica Fletcher. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ Live 24 hours a day. KPTZ Compass is dedicated to going into the community to bring the stories from the community to the attention of the rest of the community. If you're a community-minded person and consider yourself something of a storyteller besides, perhaps you'd like to join us. We stand ready to train promising people in the subtle arts of radio journalism. If you think this might be the right kind of creative work for you, please stop by the station at the Mountain View Commons to talk to us and fill out a volunteer application. And remember, if you have a news tip or story idea of any kind, send an email to news@kptz.org. That email again for news tips is news@kptz.org. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.